Welcome, everyone, to another Baseball America College Podcast. Along with Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. The College Podcast is sponsored by Project Lomo. Logan Morrison of the Miami Marlins lost his dad to cancer in 2010 and has worked tirelessly for a cause he cares about, fighting lung cancer. Now he's asking young fans to find a cause they care about and do something about it. You can learn about it at projectlomo.mlblogs.com, where you can get on the project's email update list. It's a great initiative, and the young fans who do the most amazing projects will have a chance to go to a Marlins game, meet Logan Morrison and some of his teammates, throw out the first pitch, and win $1,000. That's projectlomo.mlblogs.com. I want to thank those guys again for the sponsorship of the podcast. Aaron, the light is at the end of the tunnel for the regular season in college baseball. Time is winding down. This is the last weekend of the regular season for most Division I teams. We'll get into conference play, the postseason. And finally, at the end of the regular season, Aaron, we have a new number one team. And the Greek word is axios, worthy. Vanderbilt, a worthy number one. Yep. North Carolina was a worthy number one for 12 weeks. But now axios, the Vanderbilt Commodores, number one team in the country. 17 consecutive series victories, 10 of them via sweep. Yet another sweep this weekend on the road to Kentucky. We've talked about the Commodores a lot all year, but this is a machine, Aaron. What could possibly trip them up going forward?
Well, you know, Allen Oaks. I mean, that's what it is. That, you know, it's and I don't say that to be flipping.
There. Wow,
I don't say that to be flipping, but I say that because I had such regard for that 2007 Vanderbilt team that was a juggernaut, you know, comparable to this. I mean, they weren't even as good as this one. I mean, this team, like you said, they haven't lost a series, and to do this to be 24-2 in the SEC now? I mean, it's absurd.
It's absurd. And I think we both have believed at the start of the year this was a top-heavy Southeastern Conference. I do think there's some evidence at the bottom of the SEC is a little bit better than we thought, with a team like Auburn that's kind of gotten scraptastic here late in the season and playing better, forcing its way into the regional discussion. I think we both think Alabama, which is more of a bottom of the SEC team, is a talented team. Has some potential. They're scrappy and they're dangerous. And then we've got a team like Florida, which is talented but very young, has been kind of erratic, falling back a little bit this weekend, losing Auburn. So the bottom slash middle of the league is pretty good. But I don't think we saw any team just running away from the field, and like Vanderbilt has done, to an extent that we just never seen in the SEC.
You don't see it in the SEC, and it is incredible. And, you know, you mentioned that they're a worthy number one now, and heck, they would have been a worthy number one in the preseason or at any point during this season. I mean, I want to reiterate how hotly we debated UNC versus Vandy for preseason number one. And if Vandy had been preseason number one, then they would have been number one all season long because they hadn't lost the series.
That's right.
So, you know, I mean, it was just a matter of which team we settled on. And, you know, I mean, and hey, give UNC credit. I mean, they, you know, we talked earlier this year about the scoring margin, how dominant they were in going 44-4, you know, to start the year. I mean, there's no slouch. But at this point, yes, Vanderbilt is very, very deserving and incredible what they've done. It's just amazing.
Yeah.
The reason I brought up Allen Oaks thing is just because that's the only thing that can trip them up is a bad weekend or a bad break. I mean, and that happens in baseball. The best team doesn't always win. We know that. It's the hottest team that wins. But you know, that's what it's going to take because this team is complete. I mean, there's no chink in the armor now that the starters are, you know, they've tapped into their potential. I mean, Beattie had more walks this weekend, but in general, he'd gotten the walks in under control and,
right.
You know, I guess T.J. Pecoraro is still kind of trying to work his way back all the way to where he used to be, but their bullpen is so good that they can cover it even if he does struggle on Sundays. So, you know, they're outstanding.
To me, that's the difference in the two teams. And from the start of the year to now, both teams have had some injury issues. It sounds like North Carolina's, you know, they originally hoped to get Sky Bolt back by the Georgia Tech series. They did not, but his absence was not the problem. I don't think the problem was that Matt Roberts, who's not a great hitter, but is their number one catcher, he didn't play all weekend. He's got some concussion issues, so he didn't even make the trip. So they wound up starting Brian Holberton at catcher on Sunday. But the bottom line is, third start of the year, I think, at catcher. But the bottom line is, their bullpen hasn't been what we thought it was, Aaron. And I think that's the difference. Vanderbilt's bullpen, and we're talking about a hair of difference, because they're both 45-6, and as we've talked about all year, the top seven teams in our rankings, and you can maybe even extend it down to like the top 8, 9, 10. Those teams have been pretty consistent all year, going down to like 12, Louisville. Most of those teams, Louisville had a hiccup early. Oregon generally has been pretty good. And Arkansas, since the early hiccups, has been pretty consistent. But really the top 9, outside of Florida State maybe losing one or two series, those teams have all been really consistently good. But what put Vanderbilt and Carolina on a different level, I think we thought, was how complete they were. And they've evidenced that all year. And now, to me, the little question with North Carolina is the bullpen. Because we thought that would be a real strength coming into the year. It's not a weakness, but Trent Thornton is starting to handle a little freshman moment this weekend. And Chris McHugh and Trent Thornton are there two guys they trust in the bullpen. And, you know, they didn't get it done on Sunday against Georgia Tech. And then Mason McCullough was supposed to be the dude. And he comes in Sunday, he faces two batters, he walks them both, and they lose. So I think more credit goes to Georgia Tech for the fight they showed after their late season collapse. But I think that's the biggest difference. Is Vanderbilt's bullpen is just weapon after weapon after weapon, and I don't think you can say the same thing about Carolina.
And that's the thing is, you know, Mason McCullough's got a huge arm, but when they put Mason McCullough in a game the extra innings, it's kind of like, well, okay, you know, it's almost an admission that, hey, if we lose this game, it's not that big of a deal.
Yeah.
Because I mean, and it's the guy's he's erratic with the strike zone, and maybe, you know, he'll look great, but he's not a trusted guy. He got 9 innings this year, you know, I mean, you know, and he's the biggest arm on their staff.
Yep.
So you know, they've leaned very heavily on Trent Thornton, and as a freshman, that is a concern for me. I always talk about how much I worry about freshmen wearing down on the mound, especially, you know, late in the season. So that is something to monitor.
I think Vanderbilt just been so consistent, and their defense, Aaron, is I had a scout kind of banging on Tony Kemp's defense, and I understand it, you know, from a scouting point of view. But then you look at Tony Kemp, he's made 7 errors all year. I mean, their fielding percentage is, you know, ridiculous. It's almost .980. I mean, this team that just don't have an obvious flaw. So, kudos to Tim Corbin and his staff.
Yeah, and Vince Condi, you know, the guy that I think is a little bit of an unsung hero for Vanderbilt. I mean, you know, a guy that coming into the year they thought maybe he'd be the third baseman. He winds up at shortstop after some injuries. The guy's fielding .957 at shortstop. He's done a great job there. He's been one of the, you know, he gives them probably the best shortstop they've had in several years now. And he's hitting .328. He's third on the team in hitting. He's given more offense than they expected. 6 home runs. I mean, he's having a really nice year, and not one of the first names you think about with all those big names on that team.
He's not. No, you're right. I think he's an important guy to mention. And hard to have a better 1-2 punch than Beedy and Zomek right now. But Vanderbilt, worthy number one. LSU, a worthy number two, Aaron. They go on the road and beat Texas A&M. We dropped the Tar Heels to 3. The rest of our rankings, a lot of chalk in a lot of the rankings. And there were some big rivalry series weekends this weekend that affected the rankings, but they were more toward the bottom of the rankings. The one kind of series that's out there still to determine, and hopefully weather holds up here, and I'll be going to the final game tonight, NC State, Florida State. And, Aaron, that's a pretty huge game. It still feels like the winner of that series, you've been writing for weeks, the winner of that series seems to have the inside track to being a top 8 national seed. Do you still feel that way? And is this one of the bigger Monday night games that we can think of this year?
Yeah, I do feel that way, and certainly it's the biggest Monday night game of the year. I mean, you got two top 10 teams fighting for a national seed, you know, fighting for first place in their division. The team that wins that game will be in first place in the Atlantic Division. So, yeah, it's going to be – I can't wait. If we get screwed in the weather again, John, I'm going to throw a temper tantrum because I was so looking forward to that North Carolina NC State game on Sunday night TV, a few weeks ago, and I got robbed, you know, and if you people need to control your weather back east, because I'm tired of this.
I will do what I can, Aaron. WREL.com, my trusted weather source, says there's no chance. It could be an isolated sprinkle or two is what it says.
Okay. All right,
but it's going to be cold tonight. It's going to be chilly. So we'll get the Bulldogs. Scott Sitz on the mound for Florida State. And we get Brad Stone, the freshman left-hander for NC State. I think a lot of us are looking forward to that. I don't know if they're going to break out any pink bats or anything like that for a day after Mother's Day, but belated Happy Mother's Day to all our listeners out there. Aaron, we also have a Twitter question. We haven't taken a lot of questions this year. I had one from Joe LeCage via email just about Trey Turner a couple weeks back, basically asking our opinion of Trey Turner and just how, you know, best shortstop since Troy Tulowitzki at the college level. And we've talked about that. That was the gist of the question that that Joe had asked a couple weeks ago, but I got to watch a little bit of this weekend on TV of Alex Bregman. I know you've seen Bregman in person. You got a great look at Bregman. I'll rephrase the question. So these are our number two and number five teams. You had to pick a shortstop, not for this year, but for a pro career down the line. Who do you like, Turner or Bregman? I know there's a possibility that neither one is a shortstop at the pro level, but which one would you take, Turner or Bregman?
Boy, that's tough.
It is tough.
That's really, really hard. I think Turner is, you know, he's so dynamic with the speed. That's such a weapon for him, and obviously he's got bat speed to go with it. You know, he's got a great fallback option in center field. I think he could be a really good center fielder at the next level. And gun to my head, I think that's probably where he ends up.
Right.
But, you know, I haven't seen him play shortstop this year, really. I mean, except on TV a couple times. But so I don't have as good a feel for how he's looked there, John, as probably you do.
I would say that at this point, he is not as consistent on the routine play, not as reliable on the routine play as Bregman is. Because I think that Turner has a little bit more range and a little more belief that he can make the spectacular play. And it's a little bit less, I would just give him a little hair less of a playmaking ability than Bregman has. That said, yeah. I was a little bit surprised just watching the LSU series. You know, I've seen some chatter online that maybe Bregman's getting a little tired, a little worn down. He is a freshman. And I think there is some evidence of that he's not – he's certainly not locked in at the plate at this point in the season as he was earlier in the year. I think that's fair.
Yeah. Yeah, I think you're right. He's cooled off a little bit. And I still think, you know, long term, I mean, it's just tough. I mean, I think Bregman is – such a good hitter. I mean, I still think he's a very tough out, and you know, he's powerful. He uses all fields, and you know, it's compact. It's just, I think it's a special bat, and the instincts and the make. I mean, the whole deal. I mean, it's. I don't know. I don't know if I can pick one.
Those
can I avoid the question?
No, those guys are both studs. But if I'm hearing you, I think you're picking Bregman, and I think that's fair. I think I would go the same direction. I do think there's a little bit more of a chance that Bregman sticks at shortstop. I think they're both going to be dynamic. Yeah. I think those are both big leaguers. I think there are just two pieces of evidence. Next year's draft class, I think, is a lot of evidence that college baseball, the talent level, with a little ebb in the last couple of years, but I think it's flowing back in the right direction. Yeah. I mean, the underclass, there's a lot of potential big-time talent, and it's great for college baseball.
I wonder if
it's going to get better, even more fun, the next couple of years.
And I wonder if that's because teams were particularly aggressive, you know, knowing that the new CBA was in the works. I wonder if teams were particularly aggressive signing players, you know, the last couple of years of the old CBA, and that's why the you know, these last 2 years have been a little maybe down. I don't know.
Possible.
I'm throwing that out there as a possibility. And I thought with the new draft rules would be good for college baseball, or the new CBA rules rather be good for college baseball. And you know, we'll see. I mean, the jury's still out, but I agree with you. It feels like the two lower classes have more talent.
Yep, and the evidence is then that's very possible. We also had another Twitter question from Bob Smith. You may be familiar with Bob, at Bob Bruin Bear. He asked about the resurgent UCLA offense and all-star pitching staff. Do we think UCLA is maybe flying under the radar a little bit? And I know they're not under your radar because you're at a lot of UCLA games and you're in the Southland. Is Laguna part of the Southland or not?
I don't know what that term even means, so I guess I'll have to abstain. I'm still new out here.
I think that means Southern California, but I think that's just a general term for the Los Angeles greater area. You know how I like my my nicknames for areas: Metroplex, Chicagoland, Tri-State area, the Unifor around Hickory, North Carolina. So,
awesome.
The Unifor is the best one. Ask your boy
catfish?
From Bunker Hill. I think it does include Bunker Hill. And
catfish.
It's environs, yes, absolutely. So yeah, but UCLA resurgent offense hitting .255 as a team. I guess they had nowhere to go from but up. But I mean, how dangerous is UCLA, Aaron? I mean, the Pac-12. I guess the big news in the Pac-12. You can answer the UCLA part. And then the other big part of the Pac-12 equation is it looks like a four bid league after Stanford getting swept this weekend by the O-State Ballers.
Yeah, and I'll write about that in Three Strikes a little bit. I mean, I was on hand for what I thought was kind of the demise of the defending national champs this weekend. This was must win to keep their season alive for me. And, you know, I think Andy Lopez, I was surprised actually talking to him afterwards, seemed kind of resigned to his fate. You know, I mean, he said, look, it's like Bill Parcells used to say, at some point, you are who your record is. I mean, that's what you are. So he knows that they're done, basically. I mean, he didn't say that, but, you know, he knows. So yeah, I think it is a four bid league, but UCLA is the amazing thing is this, John. They've gotten hot here, you know, in the second half, and they've been sweeping series, and they swept the series this weekend. And you look up, and they're still 3 games behind Oregon State. I mean, John Savage. Savage was marveling at it in his office, like, "Are you kidding me? I mean, we're 16 and 7 in the league. We should be like a game out of first place here, you know, or right in first place." I mean, he compared it to where they were last year at this time. The record is better now than it was last year. I think they were 12-9 last year at this time, and they were and wound up winning the league. So I mean, it's just what Oregon and Oregon State have done is amazing. But to answer the question, I mean, you know, the offense has gotten better. It's the at bats are more competitive now. I think they're just picking up confidence is the thing. I mean, they still aren't going to scare you on offense. I mean, look, they are hitting .255. They don't have a single 300 hitter on this team.
It's amazing. I mean,
their cleanup guy is Pat Valaika, hitting .262 with 5 homers. He's been cleanup all year long. He's a good player, but I mean, that's your cleanup guy. You know,
right.
I mean,
right.
You know, Cody Regis is that senior guy that they were counting on. He had 2 big years early in his career. He had a big weekend for him, which is a huge sign. He had 4 doubles, but coming into the weekend, he had 3 extra base hits all year. I mean, you know, it's this team is not close to the offensive team it was last year, and I give so much credit to the coaching staff, you know, Savage and also Rex Peters and TJ Bruce. Those guys have done a really good job, you know, getting the most out of this group and kind of building their confidence up. And, you know, they do battle. I mean, you know, that's one thing we see from UCLA. It's you know, with this particular team, I'm not in love with the offensive personnel, but they battle. You know, they give you quality at bats now, and that's enough with their. You know, their defense is outstanding. They field .980, and their pitching is outstanding. It's so deep. I mean, Plutko and Vanderteig are just warriors who are so consistent Friday and Saturday. And, of course, David Berg is an animal. I mean, he's just an animal. He comes in, you know, and is in with 2 guys on Saturday and in the 8th inning, 1 out, and it's like there's never a doubt he's going to get out of it. I mean, he's just automatic.
That's an All-America season. I know there are other good closers out there. But this is an All-America season. When you've already pitched 35 of your team's 48 games, you're an All-American. I mean, this guy's like Pat Venditti. I mean, it's almost that. I guess it's Venditti, but it's really that kind of. It's that kind of season. 60-7 strikeout a walk. I know there are other good closers out there, but David Berg. I mean, just love that guy. I mean, what's not to love? I mean, he does everything for UCLA. So I think it is. But I think a great point you made is just how. You know, UCLA has been hot, and they're 17-7 in a solid league. Maybe it's the best Pac-12 year of all time, but it's a good league. And they're 3 games back of the O-State ball as an Oregon State. Aaron, they just can't do anything wrong right now. And you're talking about a death blow, pretty much a death blow for the Cardinal this weekend, was it not?
Oh yeah, that's a killer. I mean, you know, this is a team that needed a hot finish to boost its RPI and save its season, and they've lost what 5 in a row now. Ugh. I mean, you know, it's just that's it. You can forget about it at this point. I mean, they're 26-20 overall. They're number 80 in the RPI. They still have to play UCLA at the end of the year. I just, you know, they've gotten swept twice in the last 3 weeks with their season on the line. Forget it. This is not. They don't deserve to be in the discussion for an at-large bid now. They only are because they're Stanford.
I think you're right, and I think the other part of this is, you know. We talked, and maybe this is premature, but we talked a couple weeks ago, Aaron, about Jim Morris at Miami and Augie Garrido. And, you know, Stanford has been good. They're not at the Texas level. I don't think they're even at the Miami level in terms of their talent. But what's your feel for this program right now? And this is a junior class that was very highly regarded.
Yep.
And then they get the bonus of Appel coming back as a senior. And this is a pretty disappointing year. I mean, I don't think there's any other way to put it, but Stanford feels like an underachieving program now more often than not.
Last 2 years in particular. 3 years ago, they actually, they made it super regional. They lost in Chapel Hill with a younger team. That team, I mean, that was a good year.
Last year, they got the super regional, and they got annihilated by the Seminoles.
They did.
I mean, it was embarrassing.
And they were preseason number 2 last year. They had back-to-back classes that were number 1 and number 2 in recruiting class rankings. You know, I mean, those were elite talent on that team last year. And, you know, the talent on this team is pretty much elite. I mean, it's, you know, maybe just a little bit less than they had last year because they don't have, you know, Piscotty and DeKroger and some of those guys. But, you know, it's just the yeah, they've had some injuries. You know, Venegas.
Wilson and Venegas are two of the big names on the team who are big disappointments, you know, and because of the injuries. So those injuries.
And Wilson has, since he's been healthy, he's actually put together a nice year.
He's raking.
You know,
he's raking. He is. He's got 5 home runs. I mean, he's I know he's still, you know, he's still going to swing and miss some, but it's like he's been a little bit more patient. I mean, the numbers sound good, and our scouting reports on him sound good for this year's draft. So to me, it's amazing. Stanford gets all this flack for its draft prospects and what its guys do in pro ball, yada, yada. You know, I get it. I think it's a little bit misguided. To me, the bigger thing is they're not winning like they're supposed to win and like you would expect them to win with the talent on hand. And, I don't know, Aaron. I just wonder about kind of what's – I wonder about what's going on there. There have been several players there who aren't getting better, like you thought you'd get better. And a guy like Dominic Jose, who flashed it last year, Coppola, who just isn't, he hasn't come back well from the knee injury. And then Blandino. I mean, Alex Blandino just had a it's not like he's swinging and missing a ton. He's just not making consistent hard contact. And you just kind of wonder. There's just been a spate of guys who not only they're not getting better, but the team's not getting better. It's just stunning to me where my entree into college baseball was the peak of Stanford's powers. You know, not the – Jim's was too, Callis's was. But for me, it was – that 98 to 2004 stretch where when I was a beat writer, they went to Omaha 5 years in a row, and one of the years they didn't, they were number one for 14 straight weeks. I mean, to me, Stanford equaled college baseball excellence, consistency, and they were a tremendous team year in and year out, and they produced big leaguers by the bushel full. That's just not the case anymore. They're just not that they're not that program anymore.
Since I've been on the beat, John, since 2005 – have they been to Omaha twice or just once?
I think it's once.
It was the Jeremy Bleich year. Yeah, that was it. 2000. I think that's it. That's
it. Think of that as the Eric Davis year. So.
Eric Davis year. That is a more accurate description.
But I mean, that's it. And that's it. I mean, Jason Castro, and they still have a lot of big leaguers. They produce, you know, big league players, but they're not winning at the consistent level they used to. And hey, we do know it's more difficult, as you've talked about, for private schools these days. That's why that's what makes what Vanderbilt's doing so remarkable, because Vanderbilt's turned that on its head. They're the deepest program in the country.
Yeah.
But I just think it's stunning that Stanford – I think kudos to Oregon State for their dominance, 12 wins in a row, 41-8 overall. I mean, it's really – except for their blip, the 1 week where they lost two series. But this team could easily be number one on our rankings as well, couldn't it?
Yeah. Oh man. I mean, it's, you know, the thing that's really impressive about them. There's so many things. I think they're really impressive. I think they're a great team. But I mean, the starting pitching now. This is what 18 straight quality starts for the weekend starters in Pac-12 play.
Good
grief. You know, now that you got Wetzler back to full health. I mean, you're not gonna find a lot of Sunday guys better than Ben Wetzler. I mean, that guy's good. You know, and you know they're able to kind of protect Andrew Moore. I mean, he's a really good freshman. You know, I mean, we've had some great freshman pitchers right now, with Eshelman and Garza down in Fullerton and Andrew Moore. You know, he's had a very nice year, but they've got the bullpen that I think they can, you know, I always look for that freshman wall. He hadn't hit it, and they can predict, you know, they can shorten games with their bullpen, and of course Matt Boyd has been outstanding this year. I mean, you talk about a guy that's quietly put together, you know, a real All-America season. I mean, he's been very, very good on Fridays, and that's a guy who's a reliever his first 3 years of his career. We always thought he could start because he had that good four-pitch mix, you know, and he's physical and durable, and I'd always like to make a good starter, and you know, I've always heard scouts speculate that, and he does. He's a good starter.
And then just the depth of their arms is just so impressive, and they're doing all this without Fry, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, they're just doing all this without it hasn't really gone according to plan, but they're also an offensive club. I mean, it's not a great offensive club, but by Pac-12 standards, they're certainly more offensive than UCLA is.
Yeah.
And pitching wise, well, they don't have the brand names maybe of Vander Tighe and Plutko. Those are the, like you said, because Boyd hasn't done it for 3 years in the Pac-12, and they have a freshman and more. They just don't have a weakness either. It really feels like they're, you know, Vandy, LSU, North Carolina, Fullerton. I think you have to put NC State in the great team category because of how hot they've been since they got Turner back. and Oregon State, these teams feel like great teams. It will be an upset to me if any of those teams didn't get to Omaha. I guess I don't quite feel the same about UVA. Maybe I should. They swept Duke this weekend. It would feel like it wouldn't be a shock if Virginia didn't get to Omaha this year. But maybe I'm wrong.
I agree with that, and I love Virginia offensively. I think out of all these teams that we're talking about, I put them in the same category with, North Carolina and LSU Vanderbilt offensively. I still don't really trust their starting pitching to the same degree as these other teams. I harbor that reservation with Virginia. Florida State is interesting too. I mean, I really like their starting pitching. That's a rock solid top three with Weaver, Lee Brandt, and Scott Seitz. And their
Absolutely.
bullpen is very good. I mean, it's a much different Florida State team than we're used to seeing. It's a pitching dominated team, and they're if guys like Marcus Davis and Stewart. I mean, these guys can continue to perform like they did yesterday. Then they're dangerous, and they're dangerous anyway. But I wouldn't quite agree with you. I wouldn't quite put them in that elite top six group just because it feels like they're not quite as good. But they're not far off. I mean, certainly a team that I would not be surprised to get and see in Omaha.
Great point, Aaron. One thing you mentioned about Virginia—it's kind of amazing. They have 8 more strikeouts than walks all year. And correct me if I'm wrong. Isn't Mike Poppy leading the nation in OPS? I think he leads the
I mean,
whole
yeah, he might
country in
be. I
OPS. It's
think
like
last time I checked, he was.
he might have been passed by your main man, Chris Bryant, this weekend because I think Poppy leads the country in on base at 543 on base, but. Once Bryant's slugging percentage went close to 900, I think he's passed Mike Poppy in OPS. But I mean, that's how you have the kind of year that Virginia's having. You have some guys you weren't expecting break through and have some really big years. So they were expecting big things out of Jared King and Nate Irvin, some of their returning regulars. And those guys have been solid, but not spectacular. But guys like Cogswell and Poppy have made these big steps forward. And maybe I should give Virginia a little bit more respect. But it does feel like their pitching is more good than great, and there's not a shut down guy over there. It's a Baseball America podcast on the college side with John and Aaron. Aaron, rivalry weekends were a lot of rivalry series, or as Ray Tanner would say, series, in college baseball this
That gets
year.
me every time. That gets me every time. I love Coach Tanner. I'm gonna miss hearing that in Omaha. That
Absolutely,
series.
absolutely. We love the series references from Ray Tanner, but one of the big ones was Kansas State. We had two big ones in the Big 12 specifically, Kansas State, Oklahoma State, and Aaron. Neither of these went the way that we would have thought going in. I guess Kansas State we thought could win that series, but to go to Kansas and sweep that series vaulted Kansas State into our top 25 rankings at number 19, and K State now, Aaron, not just in first place in the Big 12, but if they can keep this up the rest of the year. K State is a regional host. I believe it would be the first time for Kansas State ever to be a regional host. Do you see that happening?
It's very possible. Yeah, they're certain. I mean, they're 22, I think, in the RPI right now. First place in the Big 12. Yes, I think if they win the Big 12, certainly if they win this series against Oklahoma this weekend, I think they host. And it is at home, and Oklahoma is scuffling a little bit. I mean, barely holding on to the back of our top 25, and I don't think either of us felt great about having them ranked, because they're 8-10 in their last 18 games. I mean, Gray and Overton aren't dominating the way they were. And I know Overton had been hurt, but he returned Sunday and threw 4 innings and just kind of, I mean, that team to me is very reliant upon those two players, and they need those guys to kind of carry them for them to make a deep run. So that's, they're looking vulnerable right now. And K-State can score runs, and that coaching staff does such a great job. I feel like every year, whether they're a great team or a middle of the pack team, they get the most out of their players. They grind. You know,
Right.
they're like one of those programs that they wear you down. And in this case, I think their pitching staff is nothing special. And in fact, it continues to be Dennis on Saturday. One of those guys they need to be good for them, and he hasn't been. And he didn't get out of the third inning again this week. But, you know, they shuffled the pitching. They got some freshmen in there. You know, Levi Mavorhis.
Great name.
Has three straight weeks now. He's been good on Fridays. He's keeping him in the game. And, you know, I don't know. I think maybe they thought he was just kind of a short-term fix there. But he's become kind of their guy. I mean, he's not going to give you eight innings, but he gives them a chance to win. Their bullpen is good, and they score a lot of runs. I mean, they're a good offensive team. They're solid on defense. Give them credit. I mean, they are a legit hosting candidate. And I mean, I still don't love their team because I just don't trust the pitching. But you know, these teams that can score a bunch of runs can be dangerous if they're hot at the right time. And Kansas State is hot at the right time.
And we talked in the Google Hangout maybe it was last week, about Coach of the Year candidates. Brad Hill. We left them out of that. But again, from a program building standpoint and the standpoint of a coach who, like you said, just consistently gets the most out of his players, he has to be on the short list of best coaches in the country just from a consistent grinding it out. And they're in Manhattan, Kansas. They're not getting the first run of top prospects out there. They're not getting the second run. Right. This is a guy who they made three straight regional trips from 09 to 11. It's a guy who won a Division II national championship at Central Missouri. He just really knows what he's doing, man. I mean, he just knows what he's doing. Like you said, they are grinders. So kudos to Kansas State. Aaron, another coach we think he knows what he's doing is Josh Holliday.
Yeah.
Long track record. I mean, this guy, we said it when he got hired. He was a really good college baseball player who was on a College World Series team at Oklahoma State. In a baseball family with a head coach for his dad who coached him, and now was an assistant coach at NC State, and Tom Holliday, a big league brother who mashes, and Matt Holliday, that if you ever need to have that phone call to close things out for you, how about if a big leaguer like Matt Holliday gives you that phone call? So a hell of a recruiter in Josh Holliday, who you and I both would put on the short list of best talent evaluators in college baseball, especially when you throw in the fact that his uncle is a cross-checker, has been a longtime scout for the Rockies organization. So this guy just was bred to be a great college baseball coach. And he's off to a good start at Oklahoma State. Not a great year for the Cowboys, but a good year and trending in the right direction. And they get a big series win this weekend in the Bedlam series. Kudos to the fans out in Oklahoma, both in Tulsa and in Oklahoma City, with the fan support they had for the Bedlam series. But it feels like, Aaron, Oklahoma State's trending in the right direction. And if they can win that series against West by God, Virginia next weekend, it should be a regional team. You're a sucker for some of my stupid jokes. I love it.
I don't even get that one. I'm amused that you say it every time you reference West Virginia. I don't even know what it means, but I like it.
It's fun to say for sure.
Oh yeah, Oklahoma State is now up to 35 in the RPI. I mean, they're in good shape for an at-large bid, and they're still only 11-9 in the league somehow. And they've had four straight winning weekends, and it seems weird. You'd think they'd have a better conference record, but you know they're hey, I agree with you. I mean, I think you have to give that coaching staff a lot of credit because
it's an all-star
this team.
Staff. Man, it's an all-star.
It's an all-star. I mean, that's, you know, come on. Marty Lees and Rob Walton is your assistants. Those guys are, you know, Rob Walton has already been a hugely successful head coach. And you know, Marty Lees is, he's one of the next guys on the list. I mean, you don't need a head coach. That's one of the guys people are going to look at. So that's a really good staff. But, you know, and Josh Holliday was the number one guy on our, even, you know, the before he'd ever coached a year as a head coach, he was number one guy on our top head coaches under 40 list that came out in January. So, you know, that just shows you how highly he's regarded. But I give these guys credit. They're not a very deep team and they have to scrap a little bit, but they do have some talent. You know, obviously Jason Hirsch is a really good talent and he came up huge for them on Friday. And, you know, Tyler Nerden pitched well on Saturday. He's had a nice little year. It's a pretty decent 1-2 punch there.
That's a great name. And, I mean, Tyler Nerden, come on. I mean, it's a tough name. I mean, Tyler Nerden. I mean, that's,
I know it. Yeah.
That's a lot to live up to. And it wasn't anything to live up to until about 10 years ago. And all of a sudden, you know, people are going to come up to you and say, yeah, the first thing to make soap is you have to rent fat. So
exactly.
I mean, that's tough to live up to, man.
You're right. You're right. It's a great point.
So anyway, I'm sorry I got you off. I went off on a bad tangent there. But like you said, this is not a
We
team.
Were all f***ing it, John. Let's be honest.
That's true. This has been a rollicking podcast. I hope people have enjoyed it. But this has been a team that, like you said, I mean, they got off to a little bit of a slow start, but it just feels like Oklahoma State is in – if they win next weekend, this is a regional team. Is Oklahoma trending so poorly. I mean, they're 5-10 in their last 18 games with 3 wins against New Orleans that I don't count. So, I mean, what's the prognosis for? Is it prognosis negative for Oklahoma, or can they still? I mean, that's a pretty big series next weekend for them in K-State.
Yeah, it is. They're 46 in the RPI. I mean, that's bubblicious right there.
It is.
You know, and this is a team. Let's see if they. They got 4 games left. They win 2 of them. They finish in the top 45, and you know, top 45 isn't a slam dunk, and that just, you know, that helps you. But you know, if they're second place in the league right now. So I guess if they finish, let's say they finish second place in the league with an RPI, you know, in the 40s. I mean, it would help them to win a couple of games in the conference tournament. But I think they get in, but they're not a slam dunk right now. You know, this is a team with negative momentum, and you know, the body of work is kind of, you know, it's iffy. I mean, they're 11-10 against the top 100, you know, and against the top 50, it's only 2-3. So it's not like they've got a lot of quality wins to hang their hats on here. I'm not blown away by this body of work.
I mean, I'm just looking outside the league. It's just not, there's nothing that you, like you said, there's nothing you could hang your hat on. I mean, they beat New Mexico one game. You know, that's their best non-conference win, is it not? I mean, Pepperdine, yeah. I mean, like, again, Pepperdine, I said it in the meeting today, Seton Hall swept Pepperdine at Pepperdine when they were struggling.
Yep.
And, you know, Oklahoma played Pepperdine at home and, you know, went to so if those two teams are in front of the committee, just as a hypothetical, if Seton Hall's in front of the committee with their resume and Oklahoma, isn't Seton Hall the better at-large resume?
No doubt. I mean, they're higher in the RPI in the Big East. They're hotter. You know, they just swept a great series against South Florida.
They're 33-7 since starting off 0-9.
Yes, and you know, the committee likes teams. They reward teams that win on the road, and Seton Hall has done that. You know, they've gone on the road a lot because they have to. You know, they're 18-13 on the road, John. I mean, there's not a lot of teams that have, you know, more road wins than that. You know, you're talking about Oregon and Cal State Fullerton. Those are the only other teams, you know, in the top 50 in the RPI that have more road wins. So,
right.
That's loud, you know, and they won a series at Houston. Let's not forget, it's a nice series win. That's better than anything on Oklahoma's resume, isn't it?
Yep, absolutely. I think so.
Houston's not great, but I mean, that's, you know, what's Oklahoma done?
Absolutely. And I'll tell you that we're on the Big East tangent just for a second, because we're talking about, I brought up Seton Hall. Stick a fork in Notre Dame, Fitzy, RPI or not. Stick a fork in the Fighting Irish. What happened? How did this team, how are they under 500 in the Big East? I don't understand it.
I don't either. I mean, you look at their talent. That's a disappointing year. You know, it's a team that we had in the top 25 for a while. And, you know, they won that quality series at Cal Poly early in the year, kind of used as a little bit of a springboard. But in conference play, they've really disappointed here. You know, they had that rough stretch back in early April, where they, starting with the end of the Villanova series, when they got swept by Pitt. They lost 2 games to Michigan in that stretch. You know, and that was, what, a 6-game losing streak, and now they're cold again. I mean, the last 2 weeks here, they lose a series at St. John's this weekend. They needed to win both these series to close, and you know, that's it. They're not an at-large team.
They're not. I mean, I know they have a good RPI, but I just don't see how you could take them with that resume.
They're not scoring runs. They're not scoring runs, and that's why I thought they'd be a very physical offense, a team that, you know, would be imposing in conference play, you know, with Mancini and, you know, Jigailo in the middle, of course. And,
absolutely.
You know, Frank DeCicco at the top. And they got some nice older players, and they're underachieving. It's disappointing.
It really is. I still think the Big East is a three-bid league, because I think that Seton Hall, Pittsburgh, and obviously Louisville – look like teams that should get in, even if they don't win the conference tournament. But Pittsburgh's on a little bit shaky ground there, aren't they?
65 in the RPI, you know, and they're a team that I think deserves to get in when you look at their body of work. Let's see what happens against Louisville this weekend. But I mean, they swept 5 straight series. They're leading that conference, and it's a strong year for that conference. You know, I'd like to see them get in, but they need to finish strong to get the RPI up there where it needs to be.
They really do. 40-11. It's hard to believe that 40-11 has that low of an RPI. But I think that just tells you a little bit of the caliber of opponent competition for Pittsburgh has been low. So big series for them this weekend. They're playing Louisville, correct?
They are at Louisville.
That's huge.
Series. I mean, you win that series, you're in if you're Pitt. Louisville, I think you win it and you host a regional. So there's a lot on the line in that series.
Absolutely, Aaron. we were talking earlier about rivalry series. Let's wrap up with Ole Miss and Mississippi State. It feels like we've talked an awful lot about the Magnolia State. And I'm actually, Aaron, I'm going to spring this on you. I'm thinking about it. I got a story idea in my head. I'm going to try to execute this issue. I'm just baseball in the state of Mississippi. I'm thinking out loud here. I'm ranty today. I'm all over the place. So I'm making you deal with it. So help corral me in here, Fitzy. But you got, last year you had Billy Hamilton set a record for minor league stolen bases. And Billy Hamilton, people ask, like, how was this guy, whatever round pick he was? Because it wasn't a first rounder. And the answer is Mississippi high school baseball track record. And the last guy drafted out of high school in Mississippi who's really had a significant big league career is Charlie Hayes. That's my that's a horrible Harry Cal. That's a horrible Harry Callis impersonation. But you remember him playing for the Philadelphia Phillies? He would have said Charlie Hayes at third for the Phillies. That's horrible. I'll stop. But Charlie Hayes was drafted, and he was drafted 30 years ago. He was drafted in 1983. So that's how a guy like Hunter Renfrow, with Hunter Renfrow's tools. And you talk about Chris Bryant, you comped him a little bit to Bryce Harper. You remember, I used to say that Hunter Renfrow was the Mississippi high school version of Bryce Harper, but he was right-handed because he was catching and erratic, but had huge arm strength and big raw power. So that's why Hunter Renfrow is a 31st round pick, because you can't get any sense of the caliber of competition with Mississippi high schools, with very rare exceptions, where there's some of these pockets, Pascagoula, Gulfport, the Pearl, I guess Pearl River is the name of the high school. There's some pockets, these juggernaut programs that win every year. And Aaron, I think it affects us, and I think it's all scouts trying to evaluate talent. I think it affects us, even when you look at Southern Miss and that recruiting class, that was the number three ranked recruiting class. I think some of those players are a little overestimated. Connor Barron, some of these guys, because it's such a stratified state, you know, in Mississippi. I think you have to dig a little bit on the sociological aspects, but talking to scouts, talking to coaches over the years, it's very difficult to get a read on high school competition in the state of Mississippi. And it's a fascinating draft year in the state of Mississippi, because the guy who's supposed to be the dude coming into the year is Bobby Wall. He's had a good year. He's competed. He's been really just – he has had so many, to quote, "O brother, where art thou," obstacles thrown in his path. From the blister to this weekend where he starts, pitches an inning, they get rained out, he comes back in the next game. You know, everything, a lot of things have worked against Bobby Wall, and I really respect his toughness and his grit that he's shown this year, because he really had a great year for Ole Miss, even without his best stuff. But in general, I think of it as a great baseball state because of the fans on the college side and on the high school side. In that state, they turn out at Ole Miss and Mississippi State like no place else. And there's talent and all kinds of athleticism in that state. And it's not, and I say athleticism, I'm not meaning code, because I think Hunter Renfrow, who's a white guy, is one of the most athletic players in this draft. So I'm not talking about white, black. I'm just saying there's athletic ability in the state of Mississippi. But then you have Tim Anderson, who's an Alabama kid out of Tuscaloosa, now at East River or East Central Junior College. You got Caleb Reed, a left-hander. I forget what JC is at. These two JC players are going to go in the first two, three rounds. And neither one was even drafted last year. You got the Salento Sales, the high school kid out of Mississippi who's stolen more than 100 bases this year against awful competition.
That's insane, though.
Aaron, I think he's 103 for 104 stealing.
You got to be kidding me.
It was in Faces in the Crowd in Sports Illustrated. Look it up. I just talked to a scout about him last week. He said, I could steal bases in that league, and I told him, "You don't know how slow I really am, dude." But I mean, but he said that it is the caliber of competition is so low. So I think there's a bigger story here about baseball in the state of Mississippi. But both these teams, Mississippi and Mississippi State, have to deal with this, and that's why a guy like Hunter Renfrow can come in with all the talent he had and not be really ready to play in the SEC as a freshman. And I just think it makes it fascinates me. Obviously, the Magnolia State. And both these teams, Aaron, to me, this year, to bring it back on this podcast, feels like they are both a little underachieving. I don't really know how good either of these teams are. And I don't even think they know, either of these coaching staffs know how good these teams really are. How good do you think Ole Miss and Mississippi State are? Or are they, as Andy Lopez says, what their record says they are? Good teams, but nothing special.
That's probably a pretty good assessment, and that was a heck of an excellent tangent, by the way. I give you credit. I enjoyed that. It was really good. You made some great points, but you know, they're they're middle of the pack SEC teams, and a middle of the pack SEC team is good enough to get hot and get to Omaha. We've seen that.
We saw it last year in Arkansas.
There you go. There you go. And you know, these teams are good enough to do that as well. I think Bobby Wall and Mike Myers can take you a long way in the postseason. And Sam Smith has been solid now on Sundays. And, you know, I still like their athleticism. I like, you know, I mean, they've got holes. They've got flaws. Mississippi State has flaws. I mean, the starting pitching for Mississippi State, Jacob Lindgren not getting it done right now. It's a guy that we thought they'd really be counting on.
Yep.
They're still looking for answers in week 14.
It's amazing.
In the rotation. So, but if they figure it out, you know, watch out, because I still love the depth and talent. So we'll see. I mean, I'm backing off a little bit of Mississippi State, take it to the bank to Omaha, but I'm not going to be surprised if they're there.
I'm surprised, but I'm impressed that you've backed off, because I think it was time to back off a couple of weeks ago, but I know. That's okay. I think it's smart for you to back off. Pretty much a must-win situation for Ole Miss this weekend. And even with Wall not at his best and things kind of stacked up against him. That said, I got to think Ole Miss is thinking they missed an opportunity this weekend, because they're winning 6-0 in the Sunday game and they could not get the sweep. I just thought that was a very – I hate to say that was a very Ole Miss thing to do.
Well, you know, and it's interesting. I mean, you look at some of the teams that were in similar positions. I mean, Oklahoma State had a 4-0 lead on Sunday. North Carolina was up 6 runs on Sunday. There were some teams that rallied.
You're right.
Sunday.
I strike my previous comment, because a lot of teams did that this weekend. It wasn't just an Ole Miss thing to do. You're right. Good point.
So, I don't know. I mean, I agree with you. I think those are two compelling teams. I think we got a pretty good handle on them. I mean, they're middle of the pack SEC teams that could be dangerous if they're hot at the right time. But they're not gonna blow you away at this point in the season when you look at their bodies of work, because they've been inconsistent, both of them. I mean, Mississippi State now, John. I mean, they're still 10 in the RPI, and you know, we'll probably get all kinds of people. How can you drop them so low? I don't know, but I mean,
they lost six series,
and what have they done that's impressive? I mean, they won a series against Alabama and a series against Florida. Those are the only two series wins they have against potential regional teams, and those teams are both bubble dwellers, frankly.
What they've done that's impressive is they've played a really strong schedule.
Yeah.
And they've held their own against that schedule, but they have not dominated that schedule. And
they've lost all the good teams. They've lost all the really good teams they've played.
And week after week, you look at Central Arkansas and you're like, you know, Central Arkansas is a 500 team in the Southland. It's a one-bid league. They're in seventh place in that league. I mean, your record says who you are. That's who they are. So that was a pretty bad series loss. Six series losses, Aaron. Two things I want to bring up with you, and then we'll go. The Big South. Campbell, Aaron, has clinched the number one seed in the Big South, I believe.
How about that?
19-5 in the league. 43-9 overall. So The Campbells are going to be you put them in last week as an at-large team, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. Yep.
Campbell. That's crazy. How about it? Campbell. That's amazing.
You know, and it's only one game against the top 50, too. It's 0-1 against the top 50, and they're still, you know, I mean, they're still in good shape in the RPI, because they just keep winning. They're beating everybody. They're like 43-9. I mean, that's amazing. They're 29 in the RPI with just 10 games against the top 100. They've got 15 games against teams outside the top 200. Somehow they're ahead of Arkansas in the RPI. Go figure. Some things with the RPI I just don't get.
That's one of them. And last but not least, Aaron, the Atlantic Sun. I know you like these teams. How many bids you see coming out of the Atlantic Sun between Mercer, North Florida, and Florida Gulf Coast? Or is that to be determined?
It is to be determined. I think Mercer, you know, is in as an at-large team if they don't win the automatic bid. And if they do win the automatic bid, I think it's probably a one-bid league now. I think North Florida needed to win that series this weekend against Gulf Coast, and they did not. I think, you know, Gulf Coast and North Florida are in the same boat right now. They're both, you know, 60, 63 in the RPI. I don't know. I don't see them getting that thing high enough. It's possible. You know, they both have played decent schedules. They've got some non-conference games here and there that are okay. I mean, I guess we'll see what happens. But I kind of feel like, you know, if one of those teams wins the conference tournament, you get a two-bid league. Otherwise, it's probably one.
That's how it feels. Just want to make sure. It feels like it's been a good year in that league, but not a great year. So,
yeah.
Aaron, great stuff. Really enjoyed talking with you today on the podcast. I mean, college baseball, the draft, all the stuff, just all the synapses are firing. It's a very fun time of year. Love talking baseball with you and with all of you listening. And we want to remind everyone this season's podcast is sponsored by Project Lomo. We really want to thank those guys for sponsoring the podcast. It's at projectlomo.mlblogs.com. So for Aaron Fitt, I'm John Manuel. We'll see you on the next Baseball America College podcast. So long, everybody.